From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson.
From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
These words that Donald Trump spoke on his inauguration, it's almost like they were translated into two different languages simultaneously, depending on the person listening.
Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs.
His supporters heard a message of prosperity.
Will be made to benefit American workers and American families.
Others heard something completely different. A crackdown on civil rights, a return to isolationism, and a fear that the country is moving backwards.
America will start winning again, winning like never before.
President Trump has promised to make some big changes during his first 100 days in office on issues like immigration, education, and law enforcement. For some people, the president can't move fast enough. Others dread what might come next. We're going to track how these changes affect people on the ground today and in the coming months through the lens of my hometown, Jacksonville, Florida. We chose Jacksonville because it's one of the most divided places in America. On Election Day, it was almost a 50-50 split. One of the issues that has created some of the biggest divisions, policing, specifically police shootings.
I am the law and order candidate.
Trump says he wants to increase police funding, and after years of tension around police shootings, he wants to end what he calls the dangerous anti-police atmosphere. So what will that mean on the ground in Jacksonville? To find out, producer Amy Walters and I head to a neighborhood that's still reeling from a recent police shooting.
All right, so where are we?
Right now we are in Springfield. It's a neighborhood that's got a mix. People who are really struggling to get by and people who are, you know, pretty well off.
A century ago, Springfield was the wealthiest neighborhood in the city. The 1960s brought white flight, and then in the 80s, things went seriously downhill. Like a lot of urban areas then, there was crime, drugs, and AIDS.
But the thing about Springfield that you'll see from just, like, riding through is how beautiful the housing stock is. So around 2005, 6, the neighborhood really started to become gentrified. People were spending a lot of money to fix these houses up because, you know, they're beautiful houses. And so the population began to shift.
I've been here to have my 10-year anniversary this fall. I was just thinking about that today. Goes fast.
Michelle Tapuni lives in a century-old two-story house. It was gutted before she moved in. Now it sports porches on both floors, just like the original. But this is still a neighborhood very much in transition, something Michelle is reminded of every time she locks the door.
All right, I have my keys, my purse, and my phone, and I'm gonna set the alarm.
That's a habit now. Ever since one day a couple years ago.
It was one of those things where I wasn't paying attention and someone took advantage of that and I was mugged in my front yard.
Soon after, she became president of the Springfield Preservation and Revitalization Council. Michelle's a Republican. She didn't vote for Trump, but like him, she supports the police and she has a close relationship with the sheriff's department.
I would hope that funding will be available for these officers to have what they need to be safe and to do their jobs.
Yeah, man.
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too.
A few blocks from Michelle's house, I meet up with Biko Misabiko.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
He feels differently about the police. He was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but basically, he's from Springfield.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Biko and I go way back. When he was 12 years old, I worked at a community center here, and Biko is one of my star mentees. He's 25 now and has become an activist in the community.
We don't trust the police around here. You know, a lot of us that stayed in this community have a problem with police's officer here.
Rising rent means he doesn't live here anymore, but he still works in the area. Odd jobs, teaching kids, gardening. This is where his heart is. But Springfield can be a tough neighborhood. Biko's been shot twice here. Just like Michelle, he won't give up on this place.
Around here, you know, what I try to find is never lose focus on whatever job you could get, just get it, you know.
Biko says he would call the police if there's an emergency, but there's fear there, too.
Yeah, you know, since I was about 15 years old, the police that's present here are the most disrespectful. I remember that officer, one incident on Phoenix Avenue, He slapped my friend and called him a nigga and tell him to go. Me and my friend crossed the street and I just look at him like, man, this got to stop. This got to stop. There's no that relationship between the police and the community here.
Things seem really tense, but that relationship between the police and the community could be getting worse. Ben Conark, a reporter at the Florida Times Union, our partner on this story, just broke some big news.
In the last 10 years, 124 people have been shot by Jacksonville Sheriff's Office deputies, are what they call officers or sergeants or SWAT teams, undercover narcotics. We're counting all of them, even off-duty officers.
Out of the 124, how many of those shootings were of African Americans?
96.
96. That's over 75%. But only 30% of Jacksonville is black. Out of those shootings, Ben found only two Jacksonville officers have been fired. Three others resigned, and not a single officer was ever convicted of a crime, prosecuted, or even arrested. One of those shootings was on May 22, 2016, right here in Springfield. Jacksonville Sheriff's Officer Tyler Landerville shot and killed Vernell Bing Jr. Landerville is white, Bing was black, and he was unarmed. He had no gun, and it's still an open case. It was pretty early in the evening, and there were kids playing in the park just like they are now. Here's Biko.
You know, me and Bing were close.
Were you really?
Yeah, me and him were friends. We know we were like his bigger brother and stuff like that. So, you know, when that happened, man, it really got us, it really came home with us, you know.
We're standing at the corner of 9th and Liberty. Biko stops and points to one of the kids from the park walking by.
The boy up front, he witnessed the shooting.
Yeah, I was standing right there at the opening of the gate.
Lee Davis points across the street. He sounds young because he is, 12 years old. His account pretty much lines up with what the police say happened. Lee was playing in the park and watching his little sister when he heard sirens. He ran to find out what was wrong and saw a red Camaro speeding right towards the spot we were standing.
And as the car was coming down, the police came around the corner and hit the car.
The Camaro slammed into a police cruiser. Lee says the police officer got out of his car, unholstered his gun, and pointed it at the driver who was stumbling out.
And started shooting at him. And then Vernell got out the car and started walking. And then that's when the officer shot five more times. And then he hit the ground.
The police report counts just five shots in all. At that point, Lee knew not to stick around.
My mother always told us, if you hear a gunshot, run.
Lee got away safely, but Vernell Bing did not. He died in the hospital the next day.
The police officer was giving commands to the suspect who was in the car.
This is Chief Chris Butler describing the incident at a press conference later that night.
The suspect did not obey the commands. He got out of the car, and something happened to cause the officer to unholster his weapon and to shoot the suspect.
We don't know what that something was that caused the officer to shoot, because this is the only thing the Jacksonville sheriff has said about what happened that day. They did open an investigation right after the shooting. State and federal agencies also started their own investigations. But Ben Frazier has been frustrated with the progress. He's a community activist who runs a website called The Black Viewpoint, and he has his own opinions about what happened.
We say it was poor judgment in the very least. In the very most, it was execution at the hands of a police officer of an unarmed young black man.
8 months after the shooting, it's radio silence.
The community simply wants to know what happened. But neither JSO,
the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office,
nor the FBI,
the Federal Bureau of Investigation,
nor the State Attorney's Office has ever told us since May 22nd, 2016, just what the hell happened. We think we deserve more than that.
Is that typical of the JSO?
We think that there's been a history of them not being very transparent.
It's not just Jacksonville. A lot of Americans have been disappointed with investigations into police shootings. President Trump's talking about more authority for police, which worries people who think officers need to be held more accountable. With Trump as the new backdrop, police departments like Jacksonville's don't have a lot of incentive to change. Ben Conark, the reporter at the Florida Times Union, has been going back and forth with the sheriff's office for months now. He says they haven't been open about the investigation process or the results.
Sheriff Mike Williams, the top dog there, never agreed to an interview with me on this. And his spokespeople made it clear that that didn't mean he would never do an interview with me. It just meant he would never do an interview with me about police shootings.
The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office did offer Ben an interview, not with the sheriff, but with the undersheriff, Pat Ivey. Ivey did admit they could be more transparent about how exactly these investigations work.
Maybe we haven't done the best job of explaining that process. Mm-hmm. There is a very, very, very defined process.
But the public still doesn't know what that process is. Jacksonville investigates its own officers behind closed doors, while other cities often outsource these investigations to prevent a conflict of interest. And about that investigation, we found Jacksonville police never interviewed the 12-year-old who witnessed the shooting, Lee Davis, or a handful of other eyewitnesses we talked to in our reporting. Yet Ivy says he's proud of how these investigations are handled.
I think that we've done a good job, and I know we're good at it.
And one more thing. There's a special piece of legislation that does even more to protect police officers.
The Law Enforcement Officers' Bill of Rights.
That's Ben Conark at the Times Union again. He says the Officers' Bill of Rights gives police, like Landerville, an advantage during internal investigations when the department is trying to figure out if he should have fired his gun.
It explicitly creates this space in which the officer who shot a civilian doesn't have to say anything until they have access to tons and tons of pretty much all the evidence that is going to be used against them.
Chuck Canterbury loves the Law Enforcement Officers' Bill of Rights. He's the national president of the Fraternal Order of Police, which represents police unions. He'd like to see it go national.
And, of course, if we were successful in passing it, we would ask the president to sign it.
Before he was sworn in, President Trump said he will leave that kind of legislation to the states. But empowering law enforcement, that's still his vow. So what is the African-American community in Jacksonville supposed to think? I asked Canterbury. In the last 10 years, there have been 124 shootings from police officers, police-involved shootings, 94 African-American. It just seems to me that, like, in 10 years, that there hasn't been one mistake.
Mistakes aren't crimes. It happens every day, my friend. If the officer perceived that individual, based on his experience, was going to raise that weapon, the officer does not have to wait till that weapon is raised against them. If they have articulable reasons to believe that suspect was about to cause them to be in jeopardy.
You know, I recognize that it's a really hard job, that people get into situations and you've got like 5 seconds to react. And so things happen. But I also think that when you're talking about, you know, in 10 years, 120 some odd shootings, somebody has made mistakes here.
I don't think that you can actually say that. That is by no means a huge number of shootings in a city the size of Jacksonville with the crime rate that Jacksonville has.
Under President Obama, the Justice Department opened a review of how the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office handled the Bing case, but it wasn't resolved. What will happen under the Trump administration? Attorney General nominee Jeff Sessions was pretty clear during his confirmation hearing. He criticized how the Justice Department would step in and investigate police departments after high-profile shootings.
I think there's concern that good police officers and good departments can be sued by the Department of Justice mm-hmm. when you just have individuals within a department who have done wrong, and those individuals need to be prosecuted.
Back in Jacksonville, some people are still waiting to hear why Vernell Bing was shot. Biko still wants accountability from the police, and Officer Tyler Landerville is still working for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office in an administrative role. But Biko's seen another cop involved in shootings back here on the streets.
I mean, you see these officers keep repeating the same crime and placed back in the same area. How would you feel if I known a murderer that murdered somebody, placed back in the same community? What's going to happen again? Eventually, he's going to murder somebody else. No accountability. And he just come back in the same area to repeat the same thing. And what are we to do? You know, and we feel hopeless.
Michelle Tapuni, The president of the Springfield Preservation and Revitalization Council has a completely different take. With the Trump administration, she's hoping that the police will have the resources they need. She sees police as a way to protect the community.
Our intent is we moved here because we like the diversity and we want to keep it that way. But how do we do it where everyone's still in a healthy, happy, safe environment and everyone has an opportunity to really excel?
We're going to keep up with Michelle and Biko to see how Trump's presidency affects them both, and we'll keep you in the loop. You can see more of the Florida Times Union investigation on their website, jacksonville.com. They've gathered information on each one of those 124 police shootings. Next up, we hear some of Jacksonville's hopes and fears on immigration under President Trump.
It is scary. And as of right now, I really don't know. I'll just have to wait and see what unfolds.
That's up next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.